Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. We're joined today by the defensive coordinator and linebackers coach at Fordham, Paul Rice. Coach Rice, great to have you here on the podcast.
Well, really appreciate being on. Definitely have been listening to this podcast for just almost a year now, and you know, it's been really helpful for me to hear different perspectives from other folks around the business. Just happy to come on and hopefully contribute.
Absolutely. Well, Coach, it's always good to get another Cleveland guy on here. You grew up in Northeast Ohio, went to university school there. When was it exactly in you know, your time, whether that's been through high school or earlier or through college, that you made that decision that you wanted to go into coaching?
Well, obviously, as you well know, it is part of the culture growing up in Northeast Ohio. And it was a sport I fell in love with early on, really sixth, seventh grade playing it. And then I had the opportunity to go play college football at Yale. And I think probably end of my sophomore year, I had been there for 2 years. And I actually distinctly remember having a conversation with my dad on the phone as the school year kind of came down to it. And he asked me, "Hey, William, what do you think you want to get into?" And I said, "In all honesty, Dad, it's coaching. It is, you know, football is obviously going to come to an end at some point. And it has been such a huge part of my life and shaping me. And it was something that, to me, it was a no-brainer in terms of what I was passionate about. And that was always his advice to me, do what you're passionate about." So that's kind of how that's the beginning of it, at least, right around that time.
And in your career at Yale, you were a captain of the 2009 team. So I think when you're a captain, you start to get a little bit of a glimpse into, you know, what the coaches are thinking. Essentially, you're embodying what they need from you out on the field. How important was that experience of being a captain in your development and moving into coaching?
Yeah, I think it was a unique opportunity, an opportunity that I'm certainly very fortunate to have had. You know, there is obviously only one captain at Yale, but there obviously you have to rely on the rest of your senior class to help you out and galvanizing those guys and making sure that the coaching staff's message was passed down throughout the team to the young guys, especially as you're trying to help them build a culture and also just, you know, the ability to, you know, be in certain situations where you have to kind of work through some tougher topics, tougher situations, and make sure everyone's on the same page. Whatever the decision gets made, whether it's, you know, teammates and or anything like that. So it was a great experience, and it's definitely something I still lean on to this day.
Coach, from there you moved into, I guess, the typical track of getting into college coaching. You served as a volunteer. You actually went on and also played in Europe a little bit in Barcelona as a player coach. So you talk to a lot of coaches who get into this profession. They're a little bit poor at the beginning, right? They've got to work through it and be limited earnings or GAs and not quite into the opportunity to make the money yet. But those experiences early on, what are some of the key takeaways you had in, you know, both from your experience as a volunteer and moving through the ranks, as well as, you know, the unique opportunity you had to play ball in Barcelona?
Well, I think that the first thing with the Barcelona deal, that was kind of a situation that came up the summer after I graduated. And it was as simple as, you know, I was actually working on a political campaign at that point as a volunteer, and really not enjoying it all that much. And I got a call from my buddy saying he had just signed a contract with the team in Barcelona that needs a linebacker. So I put a highlight tape together. I sent it over. They liked what they saw, and I ended up signing a contract the next week. And like you said, part of the deal was, you know, you go over there and you're a coach as well. So, getting a chance to, you know, run Indy with the DBs, the linebackers, and even the D line a little bit, was a unique kind of experience, over there. And we had a pretty, you know, pretty good team for that league, and we were successful. And it was, you know, definitely kind of fueled my passion to get into coaching when I got back. And once I got back after that season. I think it's the summer before the 2011 season. I just decided to go all in, and you're absolutely right. When you really get in, I think the first thing you have to do is, and I know I'm not the first person to say, is to humble yourself and just literally do whatever is asked of you. You know, so whether it's setting up the field, whether it's, you know, getting after, making sure kids are getting to class, obviously the breakdown responsibilities, and then that's where you really start learning the X's and O's of the game. I think that was the first thing that I realized I needed to do, and again, it's paid off huge dividends, because after that season, I ended up actually being, when Tony Reno got hired at Yale, he gave me my first real job in college football coaching as a director of football ops. And obviously that doesn't have a whole lot to do with football, but it was an opportunity for me to stay at Yale and actually make a little bit of money. So I got into that for 6 months, and then I ended up going down to Georgia Tech as a GA. So really just finding a way to immerse yourself in whatever responsibilities you can be given, and then just take the bull by the horns.
Coach, in those opportunities, I mean, there's, you know, a lot of guys do this, and not all of them necessarily continue on or have the opportunity to continue on. I think I've found in talking to a lot of guys who have gone through this track is that they kind of become self-starters and learn to own something and you know, set themselves apart in, you know, this guy really has put a lot of effort into this area or has stepped up here, and that's kind of where they get that opportunity. For you, what was that? What was something you really latched on to and, I guess, at least that early in your career started to make a little bit of a name for yourself that, you know, you're working to be an expert in that area?
You know, I think early on in my career, it was, like I mentioned, it was trying to find anything to do where I could make a name for myself. So as a DFO, it was organizing junior days and making sure all the recruits that came on campus had a great time at Yale. And then I think, you know, as I got into the GA part of it at Georgia Tech, I was on the offensive side of the ball, and I was actually coaching the fullbacks in the triple option offense. So that was a whole new world for me. And I think if there's anything that I was able to really do, it was all brand new, and I asked a million different questions. I was constantly in Brian Bohannon's ear, trying to learn as much as I could about it. And then just watching Coach Paul Johnson operate the entire offense and show was just a great example of how well you need to know something to really be able to operate it at a high level. And that's what obviously he knows with that particular offense. And being there for a year kind of gave me the idea that, you know, you really, if you're going to, one, you got to find something that you believe in. And two, you have to be willing to really go all in on it. Like, you know, for example, the triple option offense is not run by a whole lot of folks. And he obviously had a great career with it in the ACC of all places and was very successful. So he obviously had something he believed in, and then he continuously developed it. And it was, you know, it was something that he knew like the back of his hand. And I think that for me was, you know, something that I want to aspire to. And, it's kind of, to be, you know, a long way to answer your question, it's just, it's been a couple of different things as I've been at different spots. But the biggest thing for me was I always wanted to be the guy that was asking questions. I always wanted to be the guy that was, making sure that, you know, whether I'm teaching it or I'm responsible for giving out the playbooks or whatever, everything was how it was supposed to be. And, I was really learning the craft.
Coach, when I've been involved with teams that, you know, we were facing the triple option in that particular week, our defensive staff would kind of lose their minds in getting ready for that, because it's something if you see it, you usually only see it one time a year. As a defensive coordinator, have you had to face those kinds of offenses?
I have not as a defensive coordinator. When I was on staff at Yale, we played Army and we played Cal Poly. Both triple option teams, and we were very fortunate to win both of those games. But it was interesting having been on the offensive side, now on the defensive side, just being able to evaluate kind of how they were running it, and then also, you know, talk about different ways that we can give them some trouble.
Yeah, I guess my ultimate question there is, you know, in being on the offensive side of the ball for a year in that offense, is do you feel that's something that has helped you, that in that situation, you know, as an assistant, or if down the line you have to face a triple option team?
Yeah, it has this in terms of being able to, you know, obviously have all different phases of the triple option covered. And, you know, if you're facing a triple option team, you know, most people want to have their fastball against it, which is mostly similar to their base, and then they're going to have a couple curveballs off of it. But the reality is you have to have a dive inside, outside the quarterback player, and find your pitch player somewhere as well. And then, you know, I think it helped knowing, having a little experience in the offense, what separate answers were if you were going to play the triple option a certain way, whether they were going to try and load the box, whether they were going to try and, you know, what the next progression of kind of the play call sheet would look like. And it's different for every triple option OC, but just having an idea of kind of the home base of it, and then being able to, like I said, create a fastball and then have some curveballs that are all sound against what you're going to see.
So from Yale, then, you've been able to move on now to Fordham as the defensive coordinator. And things change when you move from just being that position coach to running the whole unit. And I think as a part of, really, if you're a position coach or a unit coach, and especially the head coach, you're going to do something to develop an identity for that unit, to develop the chemistry. A lot of people would use the buzzword word culture, to develop the culture mm-hmm. of the unit. What do you base, I guess, the way you guys are going to operate, the things you believe in that drive some of the behaviors you want? What is that based on for you?
I mean, there's really three tenets. We call them three truths of Fordham defense. And the first one is the phrase 11 dents. We want to get 11 dents on the ball carrier every single play. That is should be indicative with how we run to the ball, how fast we're playing, and then the violence that we arrive to the ball carrier with. We want to make sure, you know, when we say 11 dents around here, it is we want that to be our mantra. We want that to be our lifestyle on defense, and that we are all going to run to the ball. And then when we get there, we, you know, want to dent the ball carrier. You know, the second piece of that is knock them back. Everything we talk about on defense, whether it's block destruction, whether it's tackling, and a lot of, you know, part of, and really some of our pass coverage concepts and techniques are all designed to knock the offense back. And that's from a technique point of view and also a schematic point of view. We want the offense to go backwards, and we have an attack mentality. And then the third part of it is we want to get our ball back. Obviously, turnovers are a huge part of it. You know, we just say the offense is renting the ball around here. We want to do everything we can through running to the ball, creating some havoc to get our ball back and get it to the offense.
Coach, want to dig into the tackling side of things before we got going. You and I talked about some things that have changed for you and over time, and especially what you're doing at Fordham, that, you know, you've moved away, I guess, from the typical tackle circuit and really become focused more on positional tackle. Talk to us a little bit about your philosophy behind that, and as well as what that looks like for you guys on a daily basis.
So, you know, the philosophy behind it is, you know, simply put, again, we want to knock people back. And, you know, there's a couple pieces to how we implement it. I think, you know, you really have to talk about your tackling philosophy at first. And our basic thing besides knocking back is we want to reshape the ball carrier. And we talk to our kids a lot about how we're going to do that. And we kind of break it down into four different situations that you're going to find yourself on a football field, you know, we're ready to tackle a ball carrier. And the first is an inline situation, really that phone booth type tackle. There's an open field situation, an engaged situation where you're engaged in a block or just recently have torn off a block, and you have to get yourself back ready to play and tackle. And then finally, the last chance tackle, which is you're in pursuit. The ball carrier is going to score a touchdown unless you long layout and swipe an ankle. So, you know, those are the four things we talk to our guys about as a defense. And then how we teach it is a little bit different than where I've been before, is that we keep it all positionally. So the linebackers will, you know, there's a period in our practice that's called knock 'em back, and the linebacker, it's all basically another indie period, but the linebackers stay with the linebackers. We go through, you know, the top two or three tackles that we're going to work on for that day. Really try and break it down into simple techniques, and do that. And the D-line does the same thing, and the DBs do the same thing. And the kind of philosophy behind it is corners aren't going to make the same tackles as three techniques. Linebackers aren't generally going to make the same tackles as corners as well. So, you know, being able to really focus in your position group on the tackles that you're going to have to really work on, that you're seeing a lot based on, and it's really, you know, we do it for our scheme, but it could, you know, you can fit it into any scheme that, that you want to run, and really hone in on what the details and the specifics of the techniques are.
Coach, I know we talked a little bit about, you know, thinking in terms of how that fits scheme. As you get more in tune with, you know, how these tackles work in different positions and the fits you want on your defense, you really start to view those two things together. I know as a, and I'm thinking back, this was, you know, before I moved to the college level, you know, coached at the high school level and would coach both sides of the ball. And it was almost like at that time, like we knew obviously that there's tackles going to be part of every play, but we didn't necessarily think about how that fit together with the scheme. What's your thoughts and how do you work that together, the scheme into really into, you know, you mentioned a little bit about how you practice it, but, you know, into the game planning part as well.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is, you know, you really turn on, you turn the film on and you start seeing kind of what your guys are doing within your scheme. We're a gap oriented defense. You know, we are, it is a gap and a half defense. It's responsible for a gap or a fit. And then, the half of it is, you know, going to find the ball carrier once you've taken care of your back. But what you start finding is that, within that, you know, the linebackers end up, when you're responsible for a gap, you're going to go downhill on tight flow as an A-gap linebacker. You're going to engage that guard or center. You start finding on the tape that those guys make a lot of engaged tackles. They make a lot of the same tackles as the defensive, the DTs do, the noses and the three techniques. So you start building kind of your positional tackle period around that. You know, and if, you know, the other part of our defense is that we're going to try and find edges everywhere we can. So those safeties that are coming down into their alley fit or the corners that are the ultimate force on the edge, the outside force, you know, their tackles are very different. So they're much more looking at pressing a hip and either staying inside out or outside in, depending on where their near hip is and how they're going to take their shot. Is it going to be a roll tackle situation? Is it a sideline situation? So you really start looking at where your guys are making plays, and that really determines where kind of how things are going to go through, you know, how you're going to teach your tackling.
Just a quick pause in the podcast here and want to let you know that everything we're talking about with the advanced tackling, some of the things that Fordham does, some of the things I'm talking about with Coach Digitano, is available at footballdevelopment.com/podcast. Again, check that out there. Let's get back to the interview with Coach Rice. Coach, when you look at the evaluation and analytics that are becoming a big part of football, I always think of Coach Digitano, who's on your staff as a defensive coach, a defensive analyst. And I can think back to when I met him. He's always been evaluating the tackle. Now that he's on your staff, do you see using some of the analytics that you do to be prescriptive in where you're going to get these guys better in the skill of tackling?
I think, you know, Vin has been such a huge addition to our staff, both last spring and now coming back this spring. Talk about a guy who just looks at the game in a different way. You know, as coaches, you can find yourself looking at film, watching film, whether it's practice or game film, and constantly grading the scheme, grading the players, whether they were right or wrong, or why they were right or wrong, or what the fit was. And oftentimes you can kind of glance over, you know, well, you know, what, why is, you know, are we practicing that tackle like we were just talking about, or did we give him the tools to really be successful in that one-on-one tackling situation? And That's what Vin really does. He watches the game and he's just constantly looking at angles. He's looking at points of entry, how we're finishing tackles. And then you know, his evaluation of tackling in general, kind of the, using the five fights that I know he's talked about before, fight to track, to prepare, to connect, to finish and fight. I think those are all incredible evaluation tools. Those, when you're really grading out each player, how they do it, it really gives you an idea of what they need to improve on. And that's why they're so great. The analytics you're talking about is that if you look at them and you digest them as a coaching staff and you can grab you know, certain kids, whether it's safety linebackers or D linemen, and work on, you know, if they're not getting prepared well enough, or if they're not, if they're really not fighting at the end of it, they do everything right, but they're just not winning that last piece to win the fight on the ground. Well, there are drills that Vin's helped us develop, that he's developed, that can really pinpoint some of that stuff. So it's not just, no, he's not a great tackler. It's, well, he's really good at tracking. He can prepare, but his connection points are really bad. And you know, it's one of those things that I think it's great for coaches, but you can overwhelm the players quickly when you start giving them too much of that information. And that's what Vin does a great job of, is just, hey, this is for us in evaluating. And then how you speak to your players is you try and keep it as simple as possible and develop them where they need the help.
Coach, moving on a little bit to your scheme here, I know you have something that has really become unique to you. And I think that's what all coaches do. They learn something somewhere, then they tweak it a little bit here and there, and it becomes unique to what you're doing. Talk to us a little bit about your scheme and how it's unique to Fordham.
You know, the scheme that we've installed here and that we believe in here at Fordham, you know, it really comes from my time spent with Sean McGowan at Yale. We spent 3 years together, two when he was co-DC and one as the DC. And he had just come from Boston College and working for Coach Don Brown. So a lot of my philosophy and a lot of my kind of the scheme that I believe in has come from there. And it's really just the fact that, you know, 11 are going to stop the run, 11 are going to stop the pass. Everybody is accountable in both phases of the game. And it is emphasized from day one. It is practiced from day one. And it is expected that a corner is going to play just as physical as a defensive lineman. So from a mentality point of view, that when I've heard Coach Brown speak multiple times, and we've clinicked with him when I was at Yale a couple times. And, you know, it's something that he truly believes in. And it shows obviously with his players and the way they play. So, you know, that type of mentality that, you know, everyone is all in on stopping the run in the pass, and that the fact that we can, that we believe in doing it by applying pressure out of multiple different looks and packages. I think that's a big thing philosophically for us, is that we believe in pressure and we are going to try and apply it in a multitude of different ways throughout the course of a game. And then I know we talked about finding and creating edges to the defense. Regardless of the call, we always want to have an edge. And then, you know, the final piece of it too is that in the pass game, we believe in playing close coverage. You know, we do have a lot of kind of man match principles that are in our package. We have some true zone, but we want to take windows away, and we want to put pressure on the quarterback, the decision maker, throughout the course of the game. But like I said, in a multitude of different ways. But you know, that's, I think, the accountability throughout the entire defense is huge for us here at Fordham.
Coach, you talked about 11 stopping the run, 11 stopping the pass. What do you do in that situation where it's both run and pass, the RPO? How are you guys looking to contain that, limit that? I don't know exactly how you see a lot of those things coming, but if you do them wrong, it gashes the defense. So how are you guys limiting the effectiveness of RPOs?
Well, I think there's a couple of different ways to do it. You know, when we were at Yale, we probably played, you know, 80% man coverage. And, you know, when you're playing that much man coverage, a lot of kind of the pop passes and, you know, some of the 3-by-1 back strong stuff, and obviously your bubble game is not as attractive because there isn't as much space. for the offense to operate those type of schemes. So you end up having to deal with some of the true kind of jailbreak and swing screen games that you have to really prepare against. So, you know, when you're playing that much close coverage, you don't see a whole lot of them. We played a lot of man last year, but, you know, we did play our fair share of true zone. And I think the ability to have a plan for if you're playing a true RPO team, what sets it's coming out of, how you're going to talk to your overhang defenders, how you're going to, you know, help them go through their eye progression. And then I think finding creative ways to pressure it is what a lot of people are starting to do now. Because you're getting a lot of, it's not just your zone read bubble game now. It's the, like we talked about, the 3x, the 4x1 pop pass. You're getting a lot of the wrong way run with slants coming behind it. So there are, you know, but also those things do leave quarterbacks vulnerable if they're going to hold on to the ball. So, you know, again, finding edges and coaching up your overhang defenders to certain looks, I think help out if you're going to play a lot of the zone coverage.
With some of those heavy RPO teams, what kind of things do you do in practice to prepare for them? I know we talked about that triple option team earlier and being something that takes a little bit of thought and adjustment in what you're going to do in practice. For the heavy RPO team, what kind of things do you guys do in your work, individual drills, group drills, et cetera?
I think a lot of it is you'll probably change up, at least here, we'll change up some of our, you know, scout interior periods where typically they would just be, you know, fitting up whatever, if it's a gap scheme team, all the true run game that you're going to see, you turn that into an RPO period. And I know certain times, like when, for example, the triple option in the triple option world, we would try and we would take a backup safety or we would take a backup running back from the offense and make him the quarterback, you know, in that world, if that's what we were going to face that week, so we can get a legitimate look at it or and make sure that our guys are seeing what they need to see at the speed they need to see it. But, you know, back to the RPO deal, we take our interior run period, we get receivers out there. It really becomes kind of a full field deal, and go through their top RPOs, go through it in our zone coverage, go through it, obviously in our man coverage, what we think we'll see. And then just wrap it. But, you know, you just kind of, you make every run period an RPO period if that's what teams are really going to try and do to you.
Coach, I've seen a lot of offenses now with the whole idea being tempo and trying to get defenses to play vanilla because of the speed of it. And I see more and more of the defenses adjusting to that, using some of the same kind of tools like one-word calls to beat the tempo and be able to still do the things you want to and not have to check out of them. I think the trend I'm seeing also is those guys are getting a little bit more creative and going beyond just tempo and blending things in like unbalanced, using shifts and motions. So just what are your thoughts on staying ahead of the game and making sure you guys are able to, I guess, dictate and not let the offense dictate to you? What are some of the things trend-wise you've been thinking about in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've told multiple people that tempo is one of the hardest things that you can have to prepare for, just because it's so hard to replicate, especially if your offense isn't a huge tempo team themselves. We give our kids a multitude of calls every week, you know, whatever package is on the field. There's always going to be a base call. There will always be a pressure call, and there will always be kind of a changeup. And the ability to have a quick signal come in from the sideline and get them aligned for success and get that communicated as fast as possible is key. And I think, you know, what you talk to some of the, I guess, the air raid guys that like to go fast and, you know, just hearing about how they signal and how they get plays in, it happens so fast. And I think defensively at times, from a signal point of view, it can get a little convoluted. So, you know, you're trying to simplify those signals to your point earlier, to get it what you want, whether, you know, the front, the blitz, the coverage, or the, you know, the front and the coverage, whatever it's going to be, to get that into the shortest possible communication, especially if you're playing a tempo team that week, and then having a couple different options within your packages, I think is really helpful. But you know, what will slow down a lot of those teams again is a negative play. And if you can find a way to prepare your defense to and have a couple calls that are pressure calls that you like, that you think fit based on what they're doing, again, trying to cause some havoc on their end, I think is you know, one way to help the speed of the communication, and then also to have a pressure change up and not just be so vanilla. I think those are useful ways to at least plan what you're going to plan and get your guys ready to have something to go to on the field.
Having been in a tempo offense, I know for a long time, especially when our QB was younger, we'd do a lot of get up to the line, freeze the call, then look to the sideline and get the call. And early on in coaching that, I think it was about a year and a half before I saw defenses really getting comfortable enough to change their call. So for you, when you see those types of things, do you like to get out of the call and change up what you're reading, or is it just a matter of disguise for your defense? I think there's a lot of ways to approach it. What do you think are some of the most effective ways to do that?
I think, you know, to your point, you have to have, obviously, if you're going against one of those freeze teams, I think it's twofold. You have to have the ability to get to look back over. And in the play caller's mind, you have to, you know, whatever you called originally, there has to be, if you're going to change the call, there has to be a natural complement to it where, you know, the change of strength doesn't shift, or, you know, you got corners on the wrong side of the field, corners over in man coverage, or you want to get back to zone. You have to have something based on what you have called that you can get to a different coverage or a different pressure out of the same shell. So I think building it that way is really important. And that's really from day one. That's, you know, if you're doing that in the middle of the week, or sorry, for a specific game plan, that can be tough. So you want to have versatility in that. And then I think the ability to disguise as well. And I think we talked to our guys a lot about disguise and being able to, you know, obviously, you know, the classic example of showing man and playing zone, showing zone and playing man. I think those are two different ways to do it, but you know, one from a play caller and then one from, you know, the player's point of view. And then I know when we were at Yale, we had a senior late in defense, and we gave those guys some freedom. You know, if we felt they started moving around protections, or we felt they were changing a couple things at the line formationally, or we would give those guys, you know, not a complete freedom, but those guys had the ability to flip a blitz, say, and you know, the ability to get themselves in a better situation. So that, but that's not obviously for everyone. That you got, there's got to be a lot of trust there between coach and players.
We have a lot of coaches at this time of the year getting ready to put in their summer installs, stuff they're going to put in August leading up to the season. When we look at all these different things we get used to in camp and working against our own teams quite a bit, and you brought up the point that if you don't have a tempo team, or you don't have a team that does triple option, or maybe some of these other things, how important is it that you are installing all these things early on so that it's not a game week new install?
I think it's incredibly important. And that's, I mean, we're going through spring cut-ups right now. We just got off the road last week. So we're really finishing up spring cut-ups and then preparing next year's playbook. And I was listening to one of the podcasts earlier, probably a couple weeks ago, and it was a talk of, you know, basically talk of, you know, grouping your playbook together, obviously by packages and cover and different themes throughout your entire your scheme, but in the play caller's mind, and also really it's a good discussion for the staff that we're having right now, is, you know, what do we like against tempo teams? What do we like? How are we going to be more versatile, and can we build it starting, you know, day one as opposed to game week, where we're going to have options, the kids are going to have options, and we can really rep it and get great at it during camp. So whether it's tempo, whether it's a true RPO team, whether obviously if it's a triple team, you know, that's a different deal as well that you need to be prepared for. But, you know, I think it, right now it's about, you know, packaging your scheme. And then also, you know, if you go all the way into your pressures, you know, what do you like against, you know, two back? What do you like against, again, RPO pressures? What do you like against, you know, the pass protections, if it's a half slide or full slide? You know, putting all those things together, having those discussions, and then being able to implement them from day one, I think is really important, because it simplifies it for you, which in turn will simplify it for the players, and they can play fast.
Coach, you shared a lot of good stuff with us today, all the way from how you think about the philosophy of the unit to practice ideas, a lot of great things you're doing. When you look at what you do as a coach, what would be the one thing you really feel gives your defensive unit the winning edge?
I think we preach to the nth degree running to the ball, number one. The scheme is the scheme. It's an aggressive scheme, and I think, you know, especially college-age kids want to be a part of something that is an attacking style defense. But, you know, what one thing that is non-negotiable is effort here, and we are always, always going to preach it. And, you know, the fundamentals are never going to take a backseat to anything else. Getting off box, tackling ball carriers, and getting our ball back will always be, you know, the most important things here when we talk about Fordham defense. So I truly believe in keeping it simple. When I was a player, I think everyone who's played this game can attest, if you're thinking too much, you know, you got problems. And we want our guys to be comfortable with everything that we've called us in the game plan. So at the end of the day, they can show off their natural gifts and go play some football.
Coach, I really appreciate you taking the time and joining the podcast, and I appreciate you listening as well. Coach, what's the best way for our listeners to connect with you?
The best way would either be Twitter, which is my Twitter handle is PowPowPow5. That's PAUPAUPAU5. I know it's a little unique in the coaching world, but that's the best way. Obviously, most guys are on there in some way, shape, or form. And then my email is just price10@fordham.edu. I'd be happy to interact with anybody who's a listener. And I really do appreciate what you're doing. Anytime I have time to listen for 45 minutes or an hour to throw your podcast on, I think it's great. And even listening to the offensive guys, whether it's what they're doing schematically, how they're teaching their fundamentals, I think it's there's a lot of good going on here. So thank you.
All right, Coach. Well, definitely connect with us again here in the future. Best of luck to you and the Fordham Rams in 2019.
All right, thanks.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please check out all we're doing on Twitter at our Twitter handle for coaches at FBDEVCoach. Check out our systems for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling at footballdevelopment.com. If you register there with your email address, you can get access to our shoulder tackle system, the entire system, as well as 3 free videos of your choice, either from advanced tackling or from our contact system, which is blocking and defeating blocks. This is some of the best stuff, some cutting edge stuff, I think, that you're going to find is very efficient and effective in the way you teach your players. And there's a lot of drills here that help you improve that skill year round. Check it out at footballdevelopment.com. Check out our coaches' notes on usafootball.com. Go to the resources tab for development and training. Our coaches' notes are given to us by coaches around the country, state champs, some of the NCAA leaders. Those guys have been doing a great job in putting that together in our tips format, which is teach, install, and problem solve. And in there, we also have further review, which we allow our clips to be downloadable, and you can download those and put them into your Huddle. No need for an extra subscription to a Huddle page. So check those out. And as always, go to blogs.usafootball.com for our show notes, our analysis articles, and coach. Finally, if you're enjoying the podcast, head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review. It really helps out the podcast.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.